Up next, our very special guest and friend, Joshua Warren. He's been working in Puerto Rico investigating the Chupacabra. And that's next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, Joshua P. Warren, you know him. He's been a guest on our program for many years now. He uses scientific methods to research and document the unexplainable, including ghostly phenomena, psychic activity, reports of UFOs. He has appeared on the Discovery Channel, the Travel Channel, numerous other areas. And he just came back from Puerto Rico, and here he is on Coast to Coast. Joshua, how are you?
Hey, doing great. Nice to be back with you, George.
How was your trip?
Oh, it was fantastic. In fact, I felt sometimes sort of like John Keel investigating Mothman with some of the weirdness that happened to me down there in Puerto Rico. And in fact, I've got a few things I'd like to sort of break on your show tonight throughout the program. You know, I always like to announce things to your audience first nationally. But let me just say, before I get into what happened down there in Puerto Rico as a prologue, I will tell you that next week I was supposed to be in Mexico.
Ooh,
yeah.
Okay.
I was supposed to be going to Cozumel to study some of the ancient Mayan ruins and also look at the possible connection between those ruins and the Chupacabra leading up toward 2012 and a very interesting set of dynamics.
Sure.
And I was really disappointed when I found out today that the ship that I'm taking down there is going to skip Cozumel, because I share your opinion. I think that this is a really overblown sort of announcement about this the statistical crisis that we have. It seems to me like it's not that important if you compare it to some other killers that we deal with on a regular basis.
Absolutely. And you know what? I'm at a point now, Joshua, I would not even trust them if they came out with figures. I would think they would have cooked the books.
And yeah.
I don't know why I feel that way, but it's just I've seen this happen time and time again now.
Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, I am going to be traveling to a few other countries. I'm going to Honduras. I'm going to Belize. I'm going to Grand Cayman. I'll be sort of hopping around that area. And I, too, have had many discussions trying to determine why this is being so exaggerated by the media. And, you know, it occurred to me, we have known. Now, this is a conspiracy theory. I'm not saying that I believe this, but this is a conspiracy theory. We know that for many, many years, Mexico has been a big hot spot for all kinds of extremely bizarre UFO-type sightings.
Right, and good ones.
Yeah, some of the best, like flying humanoids that have been videotaped by hundreds and seen by thousands of people. And, of course, we have just recently this creature that was captured in a trap down there I've been keeping you guys updated on.
Mm-hmm.
And I have always believed that the United States probably has a relationship with Mexico in which experimentation can be done down there very cheaply. And not only is it done cheaply, but also it doesn't get much media publicity because we just don't really pay that much attention to what's happening deep in Mexico. And I think that, you know, most Americans, they don't speak Spanish. They don't keep up with the Spanish media. It's a good way of concealing things. So the conspiracy is, well, there has been this new little creature captured in Mexico. There have been all these sightings. It's all culminating towards something that's going to happen in 2012. The government knows about it, and they're trying to keep people away from Mexico so they can control the situation. And so
add it to the mix, huh?
Yeah, that's just another possibility. But speaking of this little creature that was caught in a trap, now we've been talking about this thing as an alien, but more and more people say that they think it could be something like a chupacabra, because it really looks a lot like a chupacabra.
It's skeleton up, isn't it? Like we're dried out.
Well, it's a mummy now.
Yeah.
But, you know, when they captured it, it was supposedly alive. It was screaming. And I've been getting updates on this. Jaime Musan has just told me that the DNA test results have come back, and he says that it does not match with any other known creature. He also told me some other weird things. The teeth have no roots. I'm not sure what that means. Maybe later on, somebody who is a dental expert.
Well, I did 2 years of pre-dental school. If you have teeth, you have to have roots. Something's got to hold it in place.
Well, there could be something fishy about that in a number of regards. Also, they said that the ankle of the creature looks incredibly human and almost identical to a human, which is a bit eerie. And even though Jaime still is not ready to release the photos of this thing alive, I want to let your audience know here nationally for the first time, I am no great artist, but I have made a sketch, which I have permission to do, a sketch of what this creature looks like. And if you or any of your listeners want to see this, you've got joshuapwarren.com linked up at your website, Coast to Coast AM. And there is no period after the P. If you go to joshuapwarren.com and click around, there's a breaking news section, and there's a link that has my sketch of this thing. And so you can compare that to some of the pictures of the chupacabra. I am still working, however, to get you an actual photograph, and I think I'll have that soon.
Okay, you let us know.
So in looking at the fact that there may be some type of a creature like a chupacabra that has been recently captured in Mexico, and then I go to Puerto Rico, which is the birthplace of the chupacabra, I keep talking to all these researchers who are telling me that the chupacabra operates in flaps. It comes in cycles, just like Mothman has in various places. And it's a mistake to think of the chupacabra as some type of a little physical creature, that instead the chupacabra appears along with the whole phantasmagoria of other weird things, UFOs being seen, an enhancement in poltergeist activity, people experiencing time slips. And Jorge Martin is one researcher in particular that I've talked with in Puerto Rico who has been following the chupacabra for years. And he tells me that right now there is a rise in so many things that are so unusual they are difficult to even categorize and classify, that it looks like this is the precursor to another mass flap of these creatures appearing, and this time perhaps on an even wider scale. So we're not talking about them just being trapped there on the island of Puerto Rico. We're talking about them reappearing in all these Latin American areas that we always hear about. Now, I'll give you an example of this weirdness.
Okay.
When I was down there in Puerto Rico, of course, I have the Bermuda Triangle Research Center that I've been setting up there, the world's first 24-hour-a-day paranormal research center on one point of the Bermuda Triangle. And it's completely self-funded, it's self-contained, and because that it's self-funded, I go out there and I try to get, you know, finances any way I can. So we have this line of merchandise that we try to sell, souvenirs, chupacabra souvenirs, things like that, and Bermuda Triangle souvenirs, just to get some money rolling in. So I was going around the island, and I was stopping by various little tourist shops. And even though I've been around a good portion of Puerto Rico, there is this one shop that is pretty deep into the rainforest. And I can tell you 100%, I swear I have never been to this shop in my entire life. And fortunately, when I go into this area, I bring a guide with me, and so he can vouch for that fact. So I walked into this shop, and again, very remote area. And here I've got some of my chupacabra merchandise, and I'm about ready to make a pitch to see if these guys want to carry some. And as soon as I walk in the door, the first guy who sees me says, "Ah, good to see you again."
Again?
Yeah. And I figured, well, obviously this guy is mistaking me for somebody, but I thought, maybe this will work to my benefit. You know, if he's more comfortable, he thinks me, he knows me. So I just kind of blew it off and started talking to him. And then two or three other people came up. "Ah, how are you? Welcome back." There were several people who started telling me that they'd seen me there. And finally, I had to spill the beans. I said, "Well, actually, I've never been to this shop before. So, you know, I've been on, around the island here and there, but I've never been here before." And everybody looked at me for a second, and they kind of chuckled, and I could tell they didn't believe me. And I said, "No, seriously, I've never actually been here." And when this reality set in, all of these people are standing there in this shop looking at me like they've seen a man rise from the grave. And the first guy I was talking to said, "Well, yeah, you were here just a few days ago."
How bizarre.
"Talking about the chupacabra." And when he said that, the hair stood up on the back of my neck. Because not only had they said that I had been there, but that I was talking about the chupacabra.
Which is why you went there.
Yes. Now...
Man, what'd you do, go through a time warp or something?
Now, this opens up a very, very complex discussion here, because when I reassured them that I'd never been there...
They didn't believe you, first of all.
Well, they didn't, but once it finally seemed to sink in, it ended the same way this type of thing usually ends. Well, you must have an identical twin somewhere out there.
Yeah, who happens to be there talking about the chupacabra.
Yeah, and I wasn't even there a few days ago. I had just gotten into town, so to speak.
However, you could have a doppelganger out there.
There could be a doppelganger. Now, I say this reminds me of Mothman, because if you remember just, for example, the Mothman Prophecies movie, John Keel's character, he goes off, I think he wrecks on the side of the road late at night in the middle of West Virginia. He's walking through a storm, and he comes up on the only house that has a light on. He knocks on the door, it opens, and there's a guy standing there with a shotgun, and he says, "Oh, I told you, if you ever came back here again, I would kill you." And John Keel has no idea what the guy's talking about. The guy calls a deputy, and the guy stands there and says, "For the past 3 nights, at exactly this time of night, this guy's come to my door." And he's, you know, babbling on about some nonsense. And what you find is that when you look at that type of scenario, and this, I even have a bit of a history with this, because when I was in high school, I think I was maybe a freshman, I had a girlfriend who went off to band camp in an adjoining state, and that was actually in Tennessee. And she went off on the outskirts of the band camp to practice her instrument. She was sitting on a bench, and she said that she looked over and she saw me sitting there on the other end of the bench. And suddenly she was overjoyed because she thought I'd surprised her that I'd made this trip. She came over to hug me, and boom, I disappeared. She called me up hysterical, believing that I had died and she had seen my ghost. Now, I have had these kinds of experiences throughout my life whenever I've gotten into a situation where something is building, something is growing, something serious is about to manifest. And so I believe that there was some tangible representation of myself down there in Puerto Rico doing the kind of work that I was doing when I went down there in my own timeline. So the possibilities are here that I actually have some doppelganger who's working independently of myself, or we have some imposter out there who knows what my agenda is, or we have some parallel sort of dimension in which everybody has various aspects of themselves that are out there operating on your behalf. And I know that physicists have photographed the same particle in two separate places at the same time. Try to wrap your head around that.
Truly strange, though, Josh.
Is it possible, then, that, you know, that we, as individuals, are capable of existing in more than one place at the same time? That was one of the things that told me, okay, I'm in for an interesting time down here in Puerto Rico. Now, other things that continue to ensue after that, one thing is not so nice to discuss, really, but most of Puerto Rico is a very strict Catholic culture.
True.
But there are some more underground aspects where there are people who practice Santeria, Brujaria. These are things which are usually considered witchcraft, and... those people are very, very protective of themselves, and they're very private.
They use, like, chicken blood and things like that in their rituals, don't they?
In some cases, there is animal sacrifice, yes. And so I went to visit one of these practitioners of Santeria, and apparently word had gotten around that here I am, you know, Mr. Warren, the Chupacabra UFO guy, and now I'm going around and I'm poking around in the witchcraft community, if you will. And apparently sometime right around my visit, I was not there when this happened, someone went right there to the block that I was at and tossed a skinned dog onto the yard.
Jeez. In protest of you?
Well, I don't know. But the timing was pretty strange that I would arrive and I would be there asking questions. And that was, I mean, it had some symbolic meaning. that was never made clear to me.
Too many strange things happening with your visitation, Joshua.
Well, you mean just in Puerto Rico?
Yeah.
There were dozens of things that happened, but, you know, there were also times when I would hear stories that didn't quite make a lot of sense. You know, in the rainforest, for example, you know, it's a very wild environment. You've got monkeys out there that are, they're mutated monkeys that are the result of government experiments. This is not some crazy conspiracy theory. This is fact-based. Government took monkeys there in the 1950s, experimented on them. Some of them escaped, and now you have these roving bands of violent monkeys out there. You've got these, you know, boa constrictors. You've got
anacondas.
Well, I don't know about anacondas, but you got some big snakes. You've got tarantulas and all this. So, and you, well, you also have plants that move.
What do you mean, plants that move?
Yeah, and Mac, I actually shot a little video clip. There are plants there. They call them tickle-me plants. And when you touch these plants, they move just like a Venus flytrap.
Like the stimulus.
Close up.
Are they little plants or big plants?
Well, most of them are small, but I've seen them get, you know, pretty large, about the size of your a man's hand. In fact, I have a little video clip at joshuapwarren.com of one of these things. You'll see it says, like, a tickle-me plant from Puerto Rico, and you can click it and see this thing actually move.
Does it kind of, like, recoil when you touch it?
It actually folds up on itself and recoils. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah, and it kind of drops away. It's so sensitive that it pulls away. So you've got all these, you know, unusual things in this environment, and I talked to this guy who is a native there, and he is familiar with the rainforest. He owns a boat, and he goes all around the island, and he takes people out there into the rainforest investigating things. And he told me that just a few nights ago, and this fits into the idea that there is some type of an acceleration of strangeness there. He and a small group of his friends were in the rainforest at night, and they had gone off to a private area where they could just sort of, you know, party, and I don't know what they were doing, but they're sitting around, they're having a good time. And he said that all of a sudden, a sound that he could only describe as millions of voices screaming in unison filled the night all around them, coming down from the rainforest. And it was so high-pitched that they held their ears, bending over in pain.
Human voices?
He said it sounded just like humans. He said it sounded so organic that they said it would just send a chill. You know, their blood ran cold. They ran as fast as they could, and he said that there was this pathway nearby that was considered a sacred pathway by many of the shaman, and as soon as they crossed that pathway, every single one of these screams stopped in unison. And I said, are you sure this couldn't have been some kind of alarm system or something? He said, all I can tell you is it was like a million people around me were shrieking for bloody murder at the top of their lungs. He said it was completely in stereo surrounding us. And, you know, I have heard that these creatures, they have a high-pitched scream, just like I was telling you, if this thing that was captured in Mexico is
right.
Real, it was shrieking when they caught it in the trap.
And they could sound like a human being.
Absolutely, especially if there is some human characteristic. And if you want to get really dark and twisted with some of the conspiracy theories, there are people out there who believe that whether or not there is a chupacabra that's been captured, that agents of the United States and other governments have created such a thing because they want to use it as a scare tactic.
Stay with us, Joshua. Joshua P. Warren, when we come back, we'll talk about his investigation to find the elusive chupacabra. Well, next hour, we'll talk with Joshua Warren about his UFO investigations. But when we come back, let's talk about this trip to San Juan and what did he find. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. We've also got to talk about the Bermuda Triangle with you, Josh. So let's talk first of all about the chupacabra trip. How did you plan it?
Well, really, you know, I go down there on a regular basis anyway to try to gather data from the triangle itself. And when I went down there, I basically did my best to try to get the word out through some of my contacts that I'm looking for new stories, new experiences, because I have found that Puerto Rico is one of the most difficult places to investigate in the world, at least that I've been to. And the reason is because Puerto Rico has this sort of ambiguous relationship with the United States. And the United States government does incredible experiments and testing down there all the time, because the U.S. government doesn't have to be exceptionally accountable for what's happening. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of sad because for years there was actual testing of nuclear devices being done south of an island called Vieques. And for years, the military denied it, and now the groundwater is so contaminated around there that they've seen a big rise in cancer. And the government just kind of says, oh, well. And we know that there have been times when they have just released radioactive material onto parts of the rainforest to see how it affects vegetation. So there's not much consideration historically for the people of Puerto Rico. And the people down there are kind of fearful of the idea of U.S. investigators, U.S. researchers coming down there. There is a place in Puerto Rico that I believe is probably the new Area 51, and that's probably because you've never heard of it. We all know what Area 51 is.
And who controls it?
It's the United States government. It's called Campamento Santiago. You ever heard of that?
I have not.
There you go. It's a secret a facility in a way, because people know very little about it. It's the perfect place for such a base because, again, most people in America don't speak Spanish, and so they don't pay attention to things that are of a Latin nature. And then because of that ambiguous relationship that Puerto Rico has with the United States, it makes it easy to sort of hide responsibility and shuffle paperwork around. Campamento Santiago is a place that seems to produce more and more weird stories all the time. I'll give you a couple of examples. First, let me start with something that happened on my most recent trip down there.
Okay.
I took with me a gentleman named Brian Sayre, who is with THOR, which is an acronym for a Toledo, Ohio-based research team. And in fact, they're a great team. Brian is a wonderful person. He was the perfect guy to bring down there to help me study some of this stuff.
That group's supposed to be pretty good.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. You know, just from spending time with Brian, I can tell you they are way ahead of most of the teams out there, because they actually understand the true nuances and complexity.
Yep.
Of what, you know, all the questions we're facing here. What we do as investigators is a lot more than walking around in the field with a little box in our hand to see if it squeaks or squeals or not, and to say, oh, I think I'm getting something over here. I mean, really, you have to look at quantum physics. You have to look at philosophy, psychology, the mind-body-environment relationship, and those guys seem to take those things into consideration, which is rare. But unfortunately, when I was down there with Brian, you know, he really was ramped up wanting to see something paranormal with his naked eyes. Usually when I go to Puerto Rico, and I'm just like, he was there for about 4 days. Usually within 4 days, you'll probably see three or four different paranormal things. But even though he'd seen some interesting stuff, he wanted something really dramatic. And for some reason, you know, we were hearing all these great stories, but he just hadn't seen anything. And then finally, on the last night, our record is still 100%. Everybody who goes
good
down there sees something amazing. He was standing on the balcony of the research center, and we have a fantastic view, and you can see the rainforest, and you can look off in the direction of Campamento Santiago. Well, I was sort of fiddling around with something else, and of course, it's a beautiful sight. Everything in Puerto Rico is exotic and beautiful, so he's standing there. It's a nice, breezy, warm night, and all of a sudden he says, whoa, what the? And I turn around, I said, what is it, Brian? He said, man, I don't know what I saw. I said, what are you talking about? So I went over there to the balcony, and he said that he was looking out in that direction, and all of a sudden it appeared that there was an enormous bright orange sort of mushroom cloud of light that just exploded, almost like a nuclear explosion. He said that he was waiting to hear the sound of
the sound, explosion. But it never came, did it?
It never came. And he said, man, I can't believe how big that was. He said the whole section of sky just lit up so bright. He said, I've never seen anything like this. And he went on and on talking about it. So we started, you know, we took out some equipment, we started taking measurements, and we were observing, and it never happened again. Now, one reason that I find that so interesting is that you may have heard, I know I've told you in the past, but your audience may recall that I have been gathering reports now for over a year from people all over the island of Puerto Rico who are telling me about waking up in the middle of the night with this ball of light hovering over their bed in the bedroom.
It was basketball size.
That's right, basketball sized or larger, and usually it was white or it was orangish. And this light would speak to them, and you know, in a very calm voice, and it would say something to the effect of, you know, don't be afraid. We just want to let you know that there are visitors who are going to be coming to the island soon. Your family will be protected. Let everybody know. You know, messages like that. And yet, if you are not the person who the message is directed at, and you walk in on this scene, you hear this high-pitched sound. And this goes back to the high-pitched, perhaps screaming we've been talking about. But these people describe it as a high-pitched sound, almost like a tape recorder being played in fast-forward mode. Kind of, and so it's almost like that there's a time differential going on there. So when you have these particular people who are strewn across the island, who are separate from each other, who are waking up in the middle of the night, and they're seeing this, you know, illuminated form that's speaking to them and giving them a message. And then you have guys like Brian looking out there at night over parts of the rainforest and seeing the whole darn thing light up with this huge, bright, glowing flash of light. I think that these are just more indicators that we are building towards some type of a climactic event that is going to occur at this spot.
It sounds like you stumbled into all kinds of things down there.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. I sometimes you have a file that says ghosts, file that says UFOs, file that says cryptids. I just have a file that says Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico, period.
And, you know, and anything can go into that file because, you know, I'm really intrigued by the idea that all throughout history, people have been looking at the same type of being or the same type of craft and describing it in many different ways.
Well, tell me, what did some of the people say? Back to the Chupacabra for a moment.
Right.
What did they say? What have they described out there?
Well, 9 times out of 10, when people see the Chupacabra, and all of these are secondhand reports. I've never seen the Chupacabra. I've never seen a Chupacabra footprint. The only thing that's kind of weird is there have been times where I've been walking through the rainforest and I'll come upon a big hole that has claw marks in it, and this will be near a place where somebody said they saw a Chupacabra.
Go into the hole?
Well, it's not even big enough to go in.
Okay.
Yeah, it's probably, you know, like a foot deep or something like that. It could be a mongoose. So there are mongooses there. So, but it's funny that these appear around sites where people talk about seeing the Chupacabra. What these people keep telling me over and over, typical scenario, there is a sighting I just recently heard about. Once again, in the evening, in the rainforest, there is a group of about 5 Puerto Ricans who range in age from 18 up to about 33, 34. And they had been there all day. They were having a picnic. They're wrapping it up. They're about to go back home. And all of a sudden, one of them shrieks, and they look over, and they see this being that is about 3 to 4 feet tall. It's standing there looking at them, and here is the general description that I've been given. It looks very much like you would describe the typical gray alien.
Interesting.
That is that it has a big head, it has somewhat of a long neck, there's a little bit more bulk to the body, though. It's not quite as spindly. Has these very large sort of, often they're described as reddish eyes, and it has spines that run down its back.
No tail?
Well, some people say that they think it has a tail, but most people don't get a good enough look to tell for sure what it looks like from behind. A lot of people just run as soon as they see this thing. And when you see it, and it acknowledges you, it has a row of spines that I often hear about that run down the center of its head and its back, and these spines will stand up.
Huh.
And then it's funny because there are some of the older Puerto Ricans who have told me that one of the old legends is that if you are walking through the woods and you encounter the chupacabra and you see those spines stand up, then you better freeze and start slowly backing away and sing a lullaby, they say.
And run like...
Because they claim that singing the lullaby seems to sort of throw it off guard and entrances it. Now, whether or not this is true, I don't know, but I've heard it many times. And, as soon as you get far enough away, you run. But in this particular case that I was telling you about regarding the group of people at the picnic bench, this one, there was a girl who saw it. She screamed. And then the other people came rushing over. At least two of them got a good look at it standing there. And they described one of the strangest things that you'll ever hear about the chupacabra. There is sort of this distortion of light that begins to sweep and swirl around it. And then it just lifts off and shoots away into the sky.
So I've never heard that.
And that's why I think, you know, the real chupacabra is something that is a lot more bizarre than simply some undiscovered physical organic creature.
Do you think it's E.T.?
I think it's an interdimensional. Whether or not it is also extraterrestrial, I guess, depends on whether or not, you know, we need to define it that way. I mean, I don't know if it's from another rock, but I think it's certainly from another dimension.
Would you categorize the trip for the chupacabra to be successful or not?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I mean, even though I haven't seen one and I haven't gotten much physical evidence, the circumstantial eyewitness testimony is impressive. When you hear all these people who are unrelated tell you these kinds of stories over and over that have these same bits and pieces, the details, you know, that you look for, and you just combine that with everything else, it's easy for us to focus on the chupacabra, but I have found that the chupacabra is just perhaps the most outstanding aspect of this much larger change that seems to be happening. And I really do believe that it is accelerating as we move toward this date of 2012. Now, and I've never been a guy who throws out, dates, and I've never been Mr. Planet X or, you know, Nibiru and all that. None of that has ever really settled with me. But I do think that there is good reason to believe that the timing is right in a lot of ways for some type of new cycle to begin around 2012 that's going to at least open our awareness of the fact that life exists on a broader scale than what we simply look at as the direct physical.
Did you find that the people there wanted you to get information? They were hoping you would uncover things?
No, actually, there's a lot of resistance.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, it's very...
And it's beyond trust. It's almost like they want these secrets to be kept within themselves.
A part of it is very much that. I mean, for example, there are products that are produced in Puerto Rico that they just choose not to export because they want to keep it to themselves. And I'm just talking, you know, mundane things like beers or whatever, you know. But that gives you an example. There are things they like to keep within their culture. And additionally, there are some people who will not talk to you in some parts of the island unless you speak Spanish. And sometimes I have a translator with me. And of course, I'm trying to learn Spanish, but, you know, so far I don't know that much. And also, you have this this very sort of stringent Catholic layer that you have to work your way through, because I find that there are a lot of people who are sensitive to the fact that if they talk about ghosts or they talk about creatures, you know, you and I might call it a chupacabra, they might think of it as a demon, you know, they're going to actually bring something negative upon themselves. And I have seen that type of thing happen in the Caribbean in general. I mean, there are places I've gone into around the Bahamas, for example, and you'll walk up to a native and you will say, so do you know any ghost stories? And if you were to say that here in the States, it would be no big deal.
Right.
Somebody's either going to laugh or they're going to tell you a story. These people will look at you with a very shocked expression and then just slowly back away from you like you're the chupacabra, and we'll just end the conversation right there. I've had people hang up the telephone on me. I've had people slam doors in my face. And you know, most of the people are very, very nice, but you start bringing up this kind of material, you start hearing stories from people who have told me, and I won't get too specific, but I have been told by people down there who are native to Puerto Rico that once they have started doing this kind of research, the typical men in black pop up, and they shut them down. They threaten them. I've had one guy tell me that he started publishing material related to the chupacabra and the UFOs in Campamento Santiago, and that one day a group of men appeared. They confiscated some of his research material, and they threatened him. And I said, how did they threaten you? And he wouldn't even tell me how they threatened him. He was so afraid.
They threatened him so much he didn't even want to tell you that.
That's right. Yeah, all he told me was they threatened me. And then when I said, can you tell me more? He says, no, I'm sorry. That's as far as I can go. So I have heard stories about media being censored down there.
Would you go back again?
Oh, of course. Of course. You know, I've been there numerous times setting up this research center, and I have every intention of maintaining it and building it. And
that's the Bermuda Triangle Research Center. Right?
Yeah, that's right. And it's there in San Juan. But I'm facing a lot of obstacles down there, and including the fact that it seems to be that there is perhaps some type of a relationship between the media and the government and some of the tourism agencies down there that shut out any sort of investigation or interest.
Did you feel threatened?
Yeah, I was threatened with arrest one time. And it's funny because I was down around the port on one occasion. And I have a business license down there because, obviously, as I told you, I'm trying to sell, you know, merchandise and things to help fund my work. So even though I have a business license, at one point I was down around the port as a ship came in. And I wasn't trying to sell anything or hawk anything. All I had were some flyers there that were basically publicizing our interest in doing investigations and asking, you know, if there was anybody who was an investigator on the ship or whatever who might be interested in what we're doing. We're trying to get support. So I'm handing these things out. The Port Authority had told me this was perfectly fine. And even though I was given permission by the Port Authority officers who were right there, you know, down the walkway, before you know it, I had a group of 10 guys around me. And I was there with my wife and one other friend. These 10 guys surrounded me, and they said, if you keep doing this, you are going to go to jail. And I said, well, what do you mean? I'm not doing anything illegal. I talked to the Port Authority, and they were like, no, no, you don't understand. We're going to put you away. And I said, fine, go get a police officer, you know. So this whole thing escalated and escalated until these guys basically started hinting at the fact that I was in physical danger. Like I said, I had my wife there.
I wonder what they're trying to hide, Joshua. We'll be back with more in a moment.